people who get the title data scientist, and I have friends that have the title data scientist that will tell you that they are not, that they work in Excel and they're data analysts.
Hello and welcome to the Cloud Solution Architect podcast from AzureMonk.com. This is your host, Anand Kumar. I work as a senior cloud solution architect in New York City. For more podcast episodes, super simplified video lessons, and content on Azure, check out www.azuremonk.com. That's www.azuremonk.com. If you're in the data science field or aspiring to be in the data science field, you're going to love this episode. In this episode, we talk with Phil Coachman, who works as a data scientist and a principal cloud solution architect in Microsoft. We talk about Phil's journey, starting with the Bing, Xbox, and Windows 10 team to his current role. We also demystify who a data scientist really is and what it takes to be one. We talk about a really interesting and cool train derailment prevention project using artificial intelligence, machine learning, IoT sensors, and IoT Edge, which is currently in production and has been deployed to over 4 continents. Phil also gives you 4 ways on how you can keep up and learn everything you need to know about machine learning. All this and more. Without further ado, let's get to the show. Hey, Phil, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Anand. I'm super excited to be on here today.
Super excited, Phil. Phil, I know you've worked on, you know, AI even before it was sort of a thing, and you've worked on complex data mining projects in Bing Search team, and now you're a cloud solution architect slash data scientist for Microsoft, right? So walk us through your journey in Azure and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, I'd love to. So it was about 12 years ago, I started working at Microsoft on a project. It was Live Search, codenamed, and ended up being Bing. And at the time, we didn't have very many tools around to actually do big data processing. So I got to be on the West Coast as a lot of tools like Hadoop, Spark, a lot of the tools that people are using now were being invented. And a lot of that being invented by different teams coming in and out of Microsoft and around us. So working with big data, processing hundreds of terabytes and petabytes of data for Bing, for the Xbox, and for Windows 10 as my last project in Redmond, just went through a natural migration of looking at data, you know, doing the data mining and moving data, to really starting to understand about the relationships within the data, to start to get more insights into it, and just naturally moved and progressed in towards a more data science role. Coming to the role as a CSA, got to go out and start working with customers to do the same thing, to explore AI and machine learning techniques to start to find those same insights into their data. So yeah, it's a little different journey, I think, than most people being able to see the tools being built from the ground up and then work with them as this entire, you know, career and this entire field was being developed over the last decade and a half.
Yep, absolutely. And I think you have started working on these tools, like you said, even before it was known to the public as it is known today. And having worked with you on a couple of projects, I can, you know, attest that the kind of experience and expertise that you bring to the table is just phenomenal, right? And there is, I've always been curious, Phil. So there's so many different definitions, right, of this word data scientist that's being thrown around today. But as a data scientist, as a true data scientist, what is it that you know, you do on a day-to-day basis, and what do you see as the future of this data scientist role?
Yeah, that's a great question. I actually wrote a blog article about this on LinkedIn a few years ago. As people who get the title data scientist, and I have friends that have the title data scientist that will tell you that they are not, that they work in Excel and they're data analysts. Mm-hmm. A lot of people get the title of data scientist nowadays that may not think they're a data scientist or even do data science type work. So it's such a random word that's thrown out there now with such a swath of people brought into it. But I think that when I talk to data scientists who really think and do data science work, the key to it is the scientific method. If you're not utilizing a scientific method and creating a null hypothesis and going about to prove it, then you're not doing science. You could be doing data analytics. You could be doing data engineering, data mining, But until you stop and take a step back and really employ the scientific method, I don't think that you're doing data science at that point. As to what the future holds, you know, I think that you see a lot of people who are data analysts starting to do that, right? They're starting to develop machine learning models, starting to think, hey, I see this correlation. I think this correlation stands up and we can predict something off of it. And now you started to set a null hypothesis and go about to prove it. Whether they know it or not, they're utilizing the scientific method. And as tools become easier and make things like machine learning and deep learning easier for people to approach and to use, I think that you're going to see that role even become more persuasive, and that more people are going to be doing data science, whether they know it or not, in their day-to-day jobs.
Awesome. So that's exactly, you know, what I was going towards, because I'm like you said, you know, this is being so many different versions of what data scientists. And to your point, what you're saying is, as the tools get more useful, so what you're saying is it can get abstracted in a way that the people who are doing data analysis as of today will also have a sneak peek into data science, and they'll be sort of doing the data science role. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. You know, they might not be doing deep learning and doing, you know, some of the heavy stuff that you're reading in articles and what you're seeing coming out of research areas, but a lot of the stuff that happens with most of my customers and myself don't involve some of the deep learning. They're using statistical methods that have been around for decades, and understanding that doing machine learning is just that's that next step in data science that the data analysts are going to start doing. And I mean, we have it built into our tools at Microsoft. I mean, it's Excel, Power BI makes it a lot easier to do data science without even realizing you're doing it. And you have tools all across, you know, from Data Robot to Julia to Azure Automated Machine Learning that make a lot of that stuff even easier, where here's my data. Let me get an auto machine learning type of tool to help me figure out what is a good model without me maybe not knowing all of the algorithms that it's trying. So it's really an exciting time for analysts, for anybody that's involved in data to embrace the fact that they could all be citizen data scientists.
Absolutely. Yep, that's really awesome. And you know, with your experience and expertise, right, Phil, so since you've worked on like wide variety of projects, is there any particular solution or Azure project that you've worked on which, you know, stands out and, you know, has solved a business problem from your perspective?
Yeah, one of the most interesting problems I worked on was with a customer that deals a lot with trains and trains around the world, and that they have thousands of sensors on trains measuring everything from vibration to heat to the sound. And what they wanted to do was A, be able to monitor the trains, and then B, be able to detect if a train derailed, which sounds a little odd because in the United States, when a train derails, we know about it instantly on the news, on the internet, on our phones. But they have trains that are running in remote places where there isn't a human or any sort of connectivity for days. So a train may derail, and they don't know that it derailed until another train comes down the track 2 or 3 days later to find a derailed train. Mm-hmm. So the solution had to involve big edge devices, so large servers on the trains collecting all of the data. And then we actually, it was fun, we started with a POC with a Raspberry Pi and a toy train set inside of their lab. And we derailed the toy train set hundreds of thousands of times, sending the data back to the Raspberry Pi and up into Azure IoT Edge, where we then took a model built in R, was able to build that model, get it into Azure Stream Analytics, so they got real-time notifications when that train derailed. Once we showed that to the executives, it was easy for them to say, yes, we're going to go ahead and put this into production. And we started putting it into production worldwide. They sell parts to other train manufacturers and train vendors, so they were able to show it at a train show. Mm-hmm. And now this technology is literally employed around the world. It started out with train derailments in remote places like down in the rainforest where a train is running. And now they've started to employ other things like picking up the sound frequency coming off of the wheels to tell if a bearing is going to fail so that they could park that specific car and change the bearing so that the bearing doesn't break on the track, which leads to more delays. Wow. That entire architecture, you know, IoT hub, streaming analytics for real-time data processing, pushing the data down into Azure Blob Storage, and then also up into Cosmos DB for the fast SLAs that we have with Cosmos DB and the MongoDB interface, so that they can have these real-time alerts along with high-speed, fast applications working on the web and on mobile devices, was really a game changer for me. It changed my perspective on the world, you know, taking a view away from just trains in the United States to trains in other countries that might be remote. But at the time as we were developing it, we didn't have a lot of the edge tools that we had now. We didn't have Azure ML that we have now to easily create the container. So a lot of the work that is now in Azure that makes this easy, we had to develop from scratch. So it's just another part of that journey of being, you know, being a part of creating tools from scratch and then working back with our product teams to say, hey, maybe this should be the next version of the product coming along. It was really a fun project and an outstanding architecture that's still going on today.
I bet. I mean, that sounds amazing. I mean, these are the kind of things, right? So when you hear about it, so the real world impact of this is just huge, right? So you're talking about trains in a remote location, and all, it started off, to your point, from a lab environment in the garage with Raspberry Pi, and then detecting it and then scaling it up, not just inside the US, but you're saying across the world, right? This is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, this solution is employed on at least four continents that I know of. It's employed in Asia, Europe, North America, and South America. South America was a test bed. And the interesting thing is we had to get all the data to go across the 2G cell network that was set up along the tracks because there is no, there's no internet, there's no 4G for them to utilize the cloud. So it was understanding, how do we get AI on the edge? How do we get it to work on the edge? And how do we get this communication to work in a 2G environment that I know I haven't been on a 2G cell network in years in the United States. So like I said, I mean, it's, The implications were amazing, and the change of just my worldview and being able to work on a global project like that was just outstanding.
Yep. I mean, that's awesome. And I think one of the things that you mentioned, the IoT edge, right? So that, I think that itself is a game changer, right? Because to your point where you have remote locations, which doesn't really have high bandwidth connectivity back, you can have the ML and the AI deployed in the IoT edge, right?
It really is. A lot of the changes that we've seen in Azure in the last year, year and a half, have been amazing when you're, when it comes to the edge and even getting AI and machine learning models down to the edge. I think that going forward, I mean, this is really the future. So it's not AI in the cloud and making web calls. It's getting that AI as close to the human as possible. And I think we're going to see even more of that and make it even easier for data scientists to do it. You know, we spent a half a year trying to figure out how do we get the containers and all this stuff to work together to get down to the edge. And now in 2019, going to 2020, a lot of that has been really simplified with Azure and the latest tools that we put out.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, yeah, day in and day out, I think our tools constantly evolve, and, you know, from a previous year to what it is today, it's just the number of changes that's happening is just amazing. That's awesome. So Phil, on that note, I want to ask you, so if somebody came to you and asked you for a tip on how, for any new cloud solution architect, right, if they're getting into the space or into the data science space, so what would be your advice? Like, what is the path that you would recommend to them in order to get to the data science field?
So I think any new architect really needs to come, and when you're talking specifically for the cloud, really needs to have a diverse background. I work with a lot of data scientists that are coming to Azure, and they're really good at data science, but understanding how all the pieces in the cloud work together is the biggest struggle. You know, there's networking, there's governance, there's a lot of things that you don't have to go deep in the knowledge in, but just knowing where they come in, how they play, how security is going to work, is really going to help you out as an architect, whether you're focused on data science, infrastructure, or apps. Having that breadth across is going to be a game changer as an architect. And then specifically for data science, you know, I think really dialing in on what it is as a data scientist that your customers are doing and how you want to help them. You know, we have so many tools out there to make it easy. You can't be an expert in all of them. And to be able to say, okay, I'm an expert in this, but know these other tools, and I know who to reach out to and when to reach out to them, is a game changer. I can't be an expert in everything. You know, you can't, Anand, but knowing that I can reach out to you, you could reach out to me when it comes to a specific technology, that's really what makes a successful Azure architect.
Awesome. Yep. And I think you sort of touched upon two points, right? The first one is having a breadth experiences in every field, especially, and I've seen this a lot in the field as well, like somebody who's deep dive into data, if they had, an additional edge on the security piece, networking, because at the end of the day, they're all communicating, right? So having that breadth is really going to help. And at the same time, also knowing when to reach out to sort of collaborate and work on a solution. That's great advice. So Phil, from your perspective, right? So especially the data field, right? The data science field is constantly changing on a day-to-day basis. And also the cloud is changing on a day-to-day basis with all the new updates and announcements that's coming up. So what's your sort of hack, or do you have a technique to keep yourself up to date with all the new technologies out there?
So I look at a couple of different paths. First is I follow a couple websites that continually post articles and blogs. One is towardsdatascience.com, and there's just so much knowledge that is shared there amongst practitioners, amongst students who are working on data science, from professors. You can go as deep into any technology as you want and find articles on that website. The other site that I go to a lot is Machine Learning Mastery. And again, just a lot of good articles there from other people. And you'll see kind of back and forth the same people on both sites. But those are two that I always keep in my back pocket. The third is ACM. So ACM has a data science machine learning group. And these are more published articles. So being able to see what is the latest coming out of universities. Not that I would use it right now or that my customers want to use it, but because the field is changing so fast, a lot of those research papers are becoming standard techniques in just a mind-blowing pace. You know, what is a research paper today? It's probably going to be the cutting-edge technique that our customers and even ourselves are using in 12 to 18 months. So understanding what's coming in that pipeline, you know, you start to see things like recurrent neural networks and LSTMs. Those came out of research papers, and now that's a standard technique across for forecasting and natural language processing. And then just to keep my skills sharp, Kaggle has a ton of data sets and a ton of competitions that always come out. They have competitions around the holidays. Mm-hmm. You just do different predictions. So, you know, you get to play with some data, you get to try out those new techniques, but you also get to see what the other people that you're competing against are doing as they're posting their notebooks and they're posting their scripts. So you can kind of see, okay, here's maybe I've been had tunnel vision for so long, you know, using one technique. Mm-hmm. Let's just say it's a REMA forecasting when you're looking at forecasting. And all of a sudden I do a competition and I see, well, the rest of the world is now using recurrent neural networks. So now that gives me the boost to go out and actually learn more about it. So I think, you know, keep an eye on the research papers coming out, knowing that's going to be next. Looking at the articles coming out, and you start to see, okay, people are doing these more. And then being able to keep up on Kaggle, those are my top four to keep my skills fresh and try to keep on the edge of data science.
Awesome. And then how do you balance the time, Phil? So I know you're on the field as well. You're traveling to customer locations, and you're also keeping up with all the latest trends. Do you have a hack there, like to manage the time? Do you allocate a certain day, or is it a certain time of the day that you read the blogs and you take up the challenges on Kaggle?
I really struggled with that for a long time, and would go into nights and be reading in bed and things like that. And then it became as simple as blocking time on my calendar. So working with my manager to say, you know, for me to be the best, I got to have this time where I can learn. And, you know, getting my manager's support to block time on my calendar to do learning and to keep up on these was the biggest hack, if you want to call it a hack. But once I put that on my calendar and asked people to respect it, it really has been. One of the advantages I have is traveling quite a bit. So about 50% of my time I'm traveling. So when I'm in a hotel room and I have nothing else to do that night because I'm away from my family, I'm not putting my kids to bed or worried about dinner, I can actually get a lot done during those hotel hours, just trying to keep up on things. So, you know, total an advantage. I'd rather be at home with my kids, but I take advantage of every time that I have.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I agree with that as well, because that's something that I do as well. You know, when you're traveling, you make sure that you take that time, especially when you're not with your family, you might as well use that for your readiness. That's really cool. If people had to find you online, what's the best way that they can get in touch with you?
So I don't do a lot of social media, but what I do is I'm on LinkedIn quite a bit, watching it every day, and connecting with people, sending messages. So LinkedIn, Phil Coachman is my LinkedIn profile. I write regular articles out there on data science and data engineering. I watch my inbox there quite frequently. I'm not on a lot of other social media besides that, but if you connect with me on LinkedIn, I'll connect with you and we can talk, we can chat. I always love to talk about data science with other practitioners.
Awesome. So thank you so much, Phil. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for coming on the show.
And thank you, Anand, for having me. It was a pleasure to be on here. I'm like I said, I'm really excited that you invited me on your show.
Thank you.